do please perfect. Sponsor
us. Please sponsor us, DoorDash, like our family specifically, oh. Not this podcast.
I was like, does DoorDash sponsor this podcast?
No, I wish.
DoorDash, call us.
Yeah.
Welcome to the Teen Life Podcast, where we believe that teenagers are not a problem to be solved, but we are here to help you equip teenagers through the power of connection. I'm Carly Duke, and today I am joined by an extra special guest. Because with me today is my husband, Josh Duke.
Carly, thank you for having me.
That was so formal. Hi, I've never met you before.
Yeah,
good to be here.
I know. Like, we only saw each other this morning, got our kids ready for school.
Exactly.
You know.
Exactly. So we'll see how this goes.
Yeah.
Just kidding. This is going to be wonderful. But the reason I wanted to bring Josh on, because if you're jumping in and have missed the last couple of episodes, Chris is gone for this month. And we miss him, but I wanted to bring Josh in specifically for this topic because Josh is a basketball coach and an athletic director. So when it comes to the topic of athletics, there is no one I trust more to talk about it than Josh. So Josh, why don't you first start by giving us like what you coach, how long you've coached,
yeah,
what school you're at,
well, real quickly. First off, I don't think I'm going to be taking Chris's job, so I think Chris's seat is safe. I'm just kind of keeping it warm.
There you go.
But I'm happy to be here to talk about this topic. So I've been coaching for 8 years at the high school level. When I graduated college, I started coaching basketball, and I've done that for the last 8 years. This is my fourth year as a head coach.
I think that's right.
Yeah, fourth year as a head coach. My second year at the school that I'm currently at, which is Grace Prep Academy in Arlington, Texas.
So second year as athletic director.
Second year as athletic director, that's right.
But in addition to basketball, you've also coached...
track and field and golf.
Nice. So yeah. You are just multi-sport...
golf state champion.
Oh, for girls.
That's right.
So big time state finalist last year.
Yep.
So in basketball. Yep. So we have just... an absolute pro.
Yeah.
In the podcast
for sure.
Studio today. So getting into though athletics, Josh, I kind of want to talk about what parents can do, what adults can do, and also how we can best support students who are also athletes.
Yeah.
So first, just to kick it off, as a coach, what do you look for in your players?
I think the thing that sets athletes apart is their willingness to learn and their willingness to cut their ego out and be a part of something that's bigger than them. I think that is becoming a little bit more rare these days. Like I'm not one of those people that's totally given up on this generation or anything. Obviously, if I'm coaching and married to you and what you do, that would be a little bit ridiculous. But I do think that it's harder now for kids to kind of understand the benefits of doing that until they're a little bit older and can kind of look back, which I'm sure that was kind of the same thing with us. But yeah, I mean, you know, the skill level comes and goes. There's going to be kids that are more skilled. There's going to be kids that are less skilled. But the thing that we look for as a common denominator would be their willingness to learn and you know, be a part of a team.
When it comes to parents, because... honestly, we love parents, but mm-hmm. sometimes parents can be difficult, especially if you're a coach. How is the best way for parents to interact with their kids' coaches?
I've got a couple of thoughts on this. First, from the coach's side, just to be totally honest, like I think the coach's first interaction with a parent definitely does not need to be negative. The same way that like a teacher's first interaction with a parent shouldn't be negative. If you see something good in your athlete or in your student, you need to reach out to the parent and let them know that. That way you have a little bit of leg room to stand on when maybe you need to have a harder conversation with them. I think for parents, a couple things to think about with interactions would just be that, you know, me specifically, like I care for each of the kids in my program, my basketball program. But since I'm the athletic director, I also care about every kid that's in the athletic program. That's a lot of kids. It's over like 170. And it's hard to make decisions for one kid over the 170. Mm. And so most of the time, the decisions that coaches are making are because it's best for the program, best for the team. And then we start to think about how does that impact your kid individually. It's not the other way around. And so I think when parents interact with coaches, they need to kind of walk into the mindset of like the coaches are doing what's best for their program. Maybe an easy way to think about that would be parents are going to do what's best for their family, and that might not be what's best for the individual kid at that time. And so, you know, maybe some common language, common ground to stand on when that happens.
Right. And I think also assuming the best about the coach.
Yeah.
I think it's easier when I was a player to assume the worst about my coaches. But now on the other side, I see how much you think about, talk about, worry about even at times your players, and not just from a court or how they're doing in basketball, but you care about their personal lives. And good coaches, that's what they do. They care about the whole student, the whole player, how they're doing in school, how they're doing at home. And so parents, I think a good word is to assume the best and assume that that coach cares about your kid and wants what's best for them, even if that might not be what you think is best at the time as a parent.
Right.
So going into also kind of disappointment and difficult conversations, in every program, there are going to be kids who don't play or who don't play as much as they want. So what can a player who's disappointed in playing time, how can they approach you about that? What could that look like that actually gets them the result that they want?
I think the player's willingness to approach the coach about it is key. But I also think that the coach being able to read his players and know, like, man, I think they're a little bit down about the role that they've gotten. So I need to have a one-on-one talk with them in my office just to make sure they're okay. But in terms of what a player or a student can do, I think approaching the coach and saying, like, hey, I want what's best for the team, but also selfishly, I want to play more. So what can I do to help the team play more? And there's some instances where, man, if you'll do X, Y, and Z, I really think we can get you more minutes. And then there's going to be situations where a coach says, man, I love your effort. I love your enthusiasm. You know, you need to work on these things, but just your skill level and your you know, it could be your work ethic. It doesn't have to just be like, oh, I'm less skilled, but maybe the seven guys or eight guys in front of you come to the gym every single day and you only show up for practice and then go home. Mm-hmm. And a coach goes, you know, these other kids are putting in the work and the time and the extra effort on top of practice, on top of homework, on top of home responsibilities. And we just don't really see that from you right now. And that can be a hard conversation to have. But what I ask all of my players after a conversation like that is to go home and process it and then talk about it with their family. But make sure that you're being honest with what was said in the room. I love to have third parties in the room. If it's not a parent, another coach. If it's not another coach, an administrator or a teacher that they're close with, just so we're all on the same page and nothing can be misconstrued with what is said. You know, you go ahead.
So it sounds like attitude is a big part of that too.
Yeah, attitude is a huge thing, because when you approach it with, I'm not, you know, with it, it has to be earned and not given. Or when they approach it of, I'm going to do what's best for the team, regardless of how this conversation comes out. I just want you to know kind of how I'm feeling. Mm-hmm. Those conversations tend to go a lot better, and they tend to yield a lot more positive results for the player and the coach, depending on if they play more or if they don't, or if they are now focused on being the best teammate and the best cheerleader on the bench. And then when they do get those 2 or 3 minutes at the end of a game, they're just going to bust their butt and do their best for you.
So when it comes to, we're talking mostly high school because that's what you coach. But for our parents who maybe have middle schoolers or have late elementary who are coming up into sports, what are things that parents can do to prepare their kids for school sports?
You know, the longer I'm in it, the more I'm convinced that the best thing that you can do for your kid is to make sure that they can manage expectations and not worry about the skill level and not worry about, am I fast enough or quick enough or how much weight can I lift, comparing themselves to their peers, but that they would be able to go into a situation and be honest with themselves about how good or how skilled they are or how good or skilled the team is. I just, you know, when you watch, you know, trainers kind of do their thing, and there's a place for that. And then you watch, you know, AAU sports or select sports, there's a place for that. And then when you look at junior high sports, there's a place for that. High school sports, all of those things. But I see all the time kids who are like, oh, I don't do all those things, but I'm just naturally gifted. Like, I have the gifted ability to do it. Or you see kids that just put parents put thousands and thousands and thousands of dollars into this, into whatever it is, whether it be trainers or summer sports, and they're not getting the results that they think they should. And so when you get into junior high sports, when you get into high school sports, those coaches are going to do skill work with your kids. They mm-hmm. care about your kids enough. They're going to make sure that they're prepared for the game, whatever that looks like. What they can't do is undo years and years and years and years of parents and coaches and trainers telling them that they're the best and that they can't be wrong. And that if something's wrong, we'll just leave that team. If you're not playing enough, we'll just leave. That's what's breeding this discontent of, well, if I'm not getting what I want right away, there's something wrong with him or her.
Hmm. Well, even just using those early years, like you said, maybe not even for skill work, but just for teamwork.
Team. Yes.
Learn how to be part of a team. Learn how to be a good teammate and be a good role player, because that might look different depending on even what team or what school you're at.
Very few kids step on the floor as a freshman or step on the field as a freshman and have a starting spot and play all they want to, and that role never change over 4 years.
Right.
Very, very rare does that happen.
Well, and I don't have the stats on this, but statistically, your kid will not be a professional athlete.
No.
If they are in athletics.
No.
They probably won't even play in college.
Very few.
Right. And so that's something to remember too, that we're preparing kids for life, not necessarily for a career in this sport.
Yep.
And so kind of to wrap up this section, the final question I want to ask is, what can parents or adults who care about teenagers do at home to encourage their child while also supporting that team?
We talk all the time, coaches, and not just the coaches like at my school, but just like the coaching profession, that we think a lot of discontent is born and brewed at the dinner table. Mm. We know that teenagers are not very good communicators. They hear what they want to hear, and that might not be exactly what is being communicated. There's definitely some blame to be put on adults, though. We're not putting it all on the teenagers. So if you're the parent of a teen right now, and your teen comes home after a practice or after a game, and they're down about either their performance or their lack of playing, or maybe something the coach said, or maybe something their teammates said. One, you're not going to fix it that night. I would strongly suggest a 24-hour cool-off period before you engage your kid in any sort of conversation about something that they obviously care enough about that they're devoting a lot of their time to.
Right.
The second thing would be, if you think that your child, if you think there's an issue with the team, with the coach, with the players, all the things that I said, the first conversation that needs to happen is between your child and those people and not you. You don't need to step in right away. After that conversation's had, if the results are not yielded what you think they should, if they're not positive, if they're not, you know, then absolutely by all means you can step in and request a meeting and kind of go that avenue. I would say that the overarching thing that a coach would just be like, thank you. Like, that's all we ask of parents is to have our backs on our decisions, regardless of if it's what you want or if, you know, it's what your kid wants at that time. Mm-hmm. Just because, like I said earlier in the show, we're making a decision for a group, a team, a program, and your son or daughter fits into that team or program, it just might not be exactly what you want it to be.
For the trend this week, I wanted to talk about YouTube streaming, but specifically about monetizing YouTube. We talked about YouTube. I'll link the episode because right now I can't remember the number because we've done a lot. But YouTube is fascinating to me. And I asked Josh a lot of questions about YouTube because I just don't understand. Mm-hmm. And he is more in that world. So let's talk about it. How do creators make money on YouTube?
Well, there's a couple of different ways, right? First, you know, it's interesting to see now there's not as many new channels popping up as there were, you know, 5 to 7 years ago. Mm-hmm. A lot of people are kind of established on YouTube now. But they definitely use it to make money. You know, you have to have 1,000 subscribers to start earning money. And then on top of the 1,000 subscribers, you have to have 4,000 views in the last calendar year. So YouTube's not just going to let you start a channel, start streaming, and start making money. There needs to be a little bit of buy-in on their end from you.
So you're saying I can't like quit my job and go become a YouTube star today?
No. A lot, you know, it's
you don't sound excited about that.
No, I don't. You could do it though. You're talented for sure.
Oh, thanks.
But you know, a lot of these creators and influencers, you know, they're making, they're having to grind that first year, two, three, four, to really build that platform. Mm-hmm. And you can tell, like, when you watch a streamer when they were first starting and how stressed they are, because they probably just got done working an 8 to 10 hour shift somewhere else. They have a family. They're telling people to be quiet in the background. Their equipment's not the best, all of those things. And then, you know, if they do hit it big, you can tell in 3 to 4 years, it's like, whoa, like, that's grown up. Or, man, they really, like, the quality of their content has really stepped up. And it's because now they're doing this full time. They've done their video where they're telling you, guys, I've quit my job, and so now I get to bring you guys content full time. It's all about the consumer, right? And so it's interesting to see those differences for sure.
I think that's interesting to point out too, because for our kids, if they think I'm going to be a YouTube star, for these guys that hit it big, that is what they do. That is, like, straight up, their job is creating content. Their job is marketing. Their job is creating swag. That is what they do. And so you're not going to be competitive when you're just putting, like, an hour a week into your YouTube channel.
No, definitely not.
I thought it was so interesting. I'll link these sources as well. But I saw one article said a YouTube creator, like, can their money and how much they make can vary a lot. So on videos with 1 million views, I think they surveyed like 12 channels. But on a video with 1 million views, it could range from about $3,000 to $40,000 that they make on ads, which is wild. But that depends on the type of content, that depends on viewer demographics. And I want to talk about let's talk about the top earner in 2021, because this is wild to me. Would you have guessed?
No.
The person?
Maybe the person. I wouldn't have guessed how much. Just it's so hard to figure out exactly how much money they're making, just because you said, like, things vary. And they, you know, it's social media is so fickle. If this person came out and started bragging about how much money they made, it could be gone tomorrow.
Right.
If they're too meek and too humble, which is terrible to even say, they could lose it tomorrow too. It's just such a fine line of, like, what people want. So no, I definitely would not have guessed how much money they made on this year.
So the top earner, according to Forbes, is Mr. Beast. And he earned $54 million with 10 billion views. That is a lot of money. Now, not all of that is, and we'll talk about that here in a second, not all of that is just on ads, but a big portion of his are ads because he is a clean content creator. But I saw something that said YouTubers collectively earned $300 million in 2021. So both of those are records. Mr. Beast set a record. And then as a whole, they set a record. It was up 40%.
Yeah. I mean, I just think it, even for me, I mean, I think about growing up and I would go, okay, I want to watch SportsCenter. I want to watch ESPN News. I want to watch these shows, right? And now, like, I don't watch any of those anymore because I get all of my sports through Twitter. And I get all of my entertainment through YouTube. Mm. Like, that's, like, purely it. So, like, things going up, like, absolutely makes sense. It'll be interesting to see how network television tries to keep up.
Right.
Because it's going through the roof.
You're right. So other than ads, that's ads. But other ventures are also a big portion of how these people make money. So we did an episode on the Paul brothers earlier this year. And Jake Paul earned the second most in 2022. He earned $45 million. But what's interesting is 90% of his earnings came from boxing.
Right.
Not from actually YouTube.
Yep.
So Mr. Beast, as we talked about, another thing that he has is Mr. Beast Burger.
It's good.
Which I think is kind of a good burger. Of course, you've had Mr. Beast Burger.
Had to.
I'm not surprised by that at all.
Yeah.
But that sounds like, I think it's a ghost kitchen. So he runs that out of other restaurants, but 1,600 restaurants around the country have partnered with
him. It's on DoorDash.
Yes. Yeah, so do
please
perfect.
Sponsor us. Please sponsor us, DoorDash, like our family specifically, not this podcast.
I was like, does DoorDash sponsor this podcast?
No, I wish.
DoorDash, call us.
Yeah.
So Dude Perfect is another one. Our son loves this one. Mm-hmm. They earned $20 million in 2022. But other than just YouTube, they do a live tour. They have a bean.
Yeah,
they do. Have like a can of
like
beans.
Like a barbecue bean.
Which is so weird. And then they also released a book this last year. So that's where that money's coming from.
Yeah.
But then a big one that we've also talked about, Josh, is merch.
Mm-hmm.
And these, I don't fully understand this, but these YouTube channels will do merch drops.
Yeah, it varies. But you'll have, you know, people making t-shirts, hoodies, masks. Thanks, COVID. all of these different merchandise options. And the ones that do it right always limit what they're going to sell. And they do drops. And so, like, what a drop is, you know, it'll be 10 o'clock on a Monday and boom, everything's live. And when it's gone, it's gone. And they'll never make it again. And that's how they're getting us and your kids and maybe you to buy into that, like, FOMO of, like, well, if I don't get it now, I'll never get it.
It's exclusive.
I really like it. Yeah. And then the resale value on some of that stuff. And this isn't only for YouTubers. There's resale stuff like Supreme, the brand, does drops. And they'll only make it one time. And then the resale value, like, maybe if you get two, you can sell the second one. Or maybe you just want to buy that one so you can resell it and, mm-hmm. and make more money off of it.
So I just want to quickly hit on, there are huge YouTube channels that have millions of subscribers, but they don't make any money from YouTube.
Right.
Because they have been demonetized
right.
by YouTube. Yep. So that means that YouTube revokes your right to earn money with all the views. You don't get ad revenue from them. They keep that money. A couple of reasons that you might get demonetized or these channels might get demonetized is if they have offensive, harmful, or unkind language, if they select the wrong COPA audience, so that's if they say it was for kids when it wasn't, if it contains profanity, basically if it can't be said on TV, they're going to consider that. Now, you might have a couple of words dropped and they can still make money on it, but if they're dropping F-bombs constantly in their video, probably not.
Right.
And then finally, if it's too sexually explicit. So right. YouTube is rewarding channels and creators who are creating content that they feel is more acceptable, which I do appreciate.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, you see different creators try to get around certain things. Like when Logan Paul was first starting his vlogs, he would put in like a duck squeak for like every curse word.
Oh, goodness.
That was like his way of, like, you know, bleeping it out. And
it had
then,
to be annoying.
Yeah, right. So there's certain creators will try to get around it, or it'll be funny, like if you're in the middle of a video and like maybe there's like one word said, and then that person will joke about like, don't demonetize me, YouTube. You know, it's very interesting because some channels will just go full out and go, this is who we are, and we're going to make so much money on the back end of merch and online subscribers to our website or whatever it is that they don't care. They're just going to put their video out. And then there's going to be some YouTubers that this is how, like, they make their money is directly from ad revenue on YouTube. And if they're not getting the ad revenue because they're demonetized, that's a problem for them. And just like you said, the money varies. You're not always going to make X amount of dollars on a video. You can't budget for that. So even if one video gets demonetized, that could be a big deal for that person's livelihood.
Okay, for our tip, Josh, we talked about this a little ahead of time, and we've talked about this at home as well. But what is your tip going back to athletics and sports, especially for parents?
Don't put your own sport expectations on your child. Just because you were or were not good at sports or extracurricular activities doesn't mean that your kid is going to follow suit. Just because you had interest in something doesn't mean that they're going to have interest in something. I think about, like, my dad played college tennis. I think I have played tennis with my dad maybe twice. And it was when I was like eight years old at South Padre Island on vacation. I mean, like, and he never, now if I would have come to him and said, hey, I want to play tennis, he would have been like, great, let's figure it out, let's do it. But that was never something where it was like, well, since I was a great tennis player, you should be a great tennis player. Like I was talking about at the dinner table, if you have a problem with your kid's role on his or her team, but your child doesn't, that should probably be a woof, like a step back maybe, and go, man, maybe I need to reevaluate why are they playing sports, right? Because if they're playing so that you can be fulfilled as a parent, that seems like a pretty bad reason.
Right.
So yeah, if your kid's having fun and they're playing 2 minutes a game, but they're playing with their best friends and they're getting to be a part of the team, let them do it. Mm-hmm. If your kid is playing 25 minutes a game and all of the pressure of that school and community and coaches and aspirations of playing at the next level, if that is what your kid is dealing with, probably cut him some grace. Show him some grace. because they're going through a lot. And maybe you didn't play sports and they're just all about it. And you're like, I just don't see how this translates. I don't understand why you would put all this time and effort and energy into something that you're not going to do. You know, you should be doing this or that. If it brings them joy and they're getting their grades done, I think we should let them do it.
All right, that's a wrap on this one. Thank you so much for listening. A special thanks to Carly Duke and to Kelly Fan for producing this podcast. Also to Luke Cabrera for our awesome podcast music. If you want to know more about Luke and his music, check out his contact info in the description. Well, this podcast is for the helpers, and we really hope you feel helped. If there's something we haven't talked about or a topic that you're really interested in, email us at podcast@teenlife.ngo, and we will do our best to get to that topic. We will see you next week.